All right. I believe we are here. Shani Harris Bagwell, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We're just going to jump right into it. Like, what is Portland Backpack? What do you do?
So Portland Backpack is a 501c3 nonprofit org, and our mission is to serve children who are at risk of hunger by providing food sacks for weekend days when food scarcity is higher. We believe that engaging the community in our efforts creates a greater impact that reaches beyond reducing hunger. This means that we plan, purchase, pack, and deliver enough sacks to feed 1,200 kids across 15 Portland area Title I schools. And I'm Shani Harris Bagwell, the executive director.
Shani, how did you come to this work?
I saw a job ad on the internet. My friend sent it to me and said, you have lived the appropriate lives to probably take on this position. And between my former teaching, my political work, my fundraising work, this was a very good fit.
The thing about the Portland Backpacks, for so many years, I've seen different people do different projects around kids and backpacks. Like a wonderful friend of mine who used to work for Radio Cab, he was the first person that I saw years and maybe 20 years ago, maybe longer. And he got people to get backpacks filled with school supplies for the kids, right? And then we saw other people start to do it too. This is a little bit different. What you're doing is a little different. Or maybe it's a lot different. How did Portland Backpack start?
So it started with this amazing woman, Marilyn Mach, who launched the program in 2008 at her church. She had retired from a career as an applied research psychologist in U.S. Government Accountability Office and had moved to Portland from the Bay Area. She actually began the project at her church, Fremont United Methodist. And in our first year, we were serving 10 children at Woodlawn. She actually started the program because she grew up in food insecurity and literally became the change that she wanted to see in the world. When she got to a place where she was able to do something, that's exactly what she did. And it just started with 10 kids at Woodlawn School with 10 sacks a week. And since then, our program has grown into, you know, from that strictly volunteer program, we now have a mighty staff of 4 and are still heavily volunteer driven. But we have community events. We have corporate
contribution sponsors,
corporate team building events. And we have schools and organizations that join us, including Nike and the Blazers, and they donate food and they help to stuff the sacks for the kids. And following in Marilyn Mock's tradition, at the beginning of all of these sessions, we like to speak to the volunteers about hunger and about delivering a message about how hard it is for kids. And I mean, not just kids. I always put it in the perspective of, you know, how do you feel when you're hungry? How do you function when you're hungry? And we know that it's not well. And if it's not well for us as adults with irrationality to know that we're hungry, it's going to be terrible for children. And so we just talk about that. And we stress the importance of programs like ours that kind of fill the gaps that are left in the system. Volunteers also write amazing notes of encouragement for the kids, and we call them care cards, and each sack gets one.
I want to talk about that a little bit later. you know, as I'm listening to you, and as I was thinking about this show, this is theoretically, I'm going to say theoretically, the most powerful nation on earth. We keep telling ourselves that. I don't even know what's the most powerful nation on earth. I don't know if that's a function of bombs or what. But you know what? That's a good question. Is it a function of bombs, or is it a function of children being hungry? Like, what does that even mean? How does that even happen? What does that mean that we have so many children who, like you said, are they're not able to operate at 100% because they literally don't have enough to eat. And this is such a, there's so much waste in this country, and the food waste. When I hear people talk about the food waste, I never hear it talked about in terms of hunger or even childhood hunger. Like, I know you have a big brain. Like, theoretically and in reality, how does that happen? And I'm not cursing, okay? How does that happen?
How does it happen? It happens intentionally and systematically. It happens in the voting booth. It happens at the polls. It happens intentionally. We are governed by policies and by laws. Our schools are governed by policies and by laws. Our food programs are governed by policies and by laws. And so if we are consistently in a position where those policies are not helping the least among us, then I don't know if we're functioning our best as a society.
Or who are we functioning the best for within our society is the other thing that it makes me ask, that makes me wonder. If you just got here, I'm Lisa Loving. We're keeping it real. And our guest today is Shawnee Harris Bagwell from Portland Backpack. Are there other programs like yours anywhere?
Yeah, in other counties, there are some people kind of filling in the gaps. But I don't think anyone has a program that is as comprehensive as ours is, or is as low barrier as ours is. And I think that's a critical point, is how low barrier our program is.
Because I wanted to jump in and say, how old is the typical kid that receives the weekend lunches? Do they have to sign up? Like, how do you even figure out who can come into this program?
So we have a very, very simple sign-up process, because morally, we feel that it's kind of reprehensible to make people jump through hoops or give deeply invasive information just to prove that they deserve a box of mac and cheese. So what we do is we have a very simple sign-up sheet. We give it to the school leads at the schools that we serve. They collect them, and then they give us a number. We actually do not see the names of who has signed up. Those are protected. We do not ask for any invasive information about salaries or household incomes or anything of the sort. We just say, what do you need? And when the school gives us that number, we bring it.
Shawnee, you know I have a list of questions to ask you. But as I'm listening to you talk, and again, we already established in the lobby, this is the first time I've met you in real life. Like, I've been connected to you for years, I think.
Yeah.
Why does it matter about asking invasive questions? Why does it matter about making it low barrier?
Because when we talk about poverty, we tend to get kind of pigeonholed into one definition of it, which is like kind of like the federal legal definition of this is our poverty line, and if you make below this, then you are in poverty. When the reality of poverty is that about a third of the people who actually really need help don't make too much money to receive that help. And so there are so many Americans living in what I call the one paycheck away place that the aid doesn't cover. And so you may not make enough to feed your kids on the weekend, but you may be making too much, not enough to feed your kids on the weekend, but you're likely making too much to qualify for any aid that would help you fix that. And so all of the invasive information only serves to eliminate people who need help, as opposed to efficiently making it so that we can help more people.
Right. Talk a little bit more about the kids themselves. Like, how old are they? What do we know about them? They're kids. What do they, you know, do kids participate too? I just want to hear. I love the kids. I want to hear more about them.
I love kids too. That's why I got into this. I've been a teacher and a nanny and a counselor and a vocal coach and all kinds of things. And so much of my life has centered around children. The ones that we serve start at about 3 years old, because we work in some schools with a Head Start program. And we were only going through fifth grade, but one of the schools that we were in recently expanded into a middle school. And we told them that they absolutely should be offering our program to everyone at the school, because I can't make it make sense for a fifth grader who was used to getting food to then not get it because they're a year older. Again, I've spent too much time with kids to make that make sense.
Right. And the kids know. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been a journalist for years. I've covered the school district for years. And I've heard, you know, I used to work in Estacada, and they used to have a levy, a ballot levy. Every year, everybody in the city got to vote on whether they were going to fund the schools. It was instant karma. Mm-hmm. But the kids know. People act like the kids are just units. The kids know. They know what the adults are doing.
Kids are one of the, you know, last unprotected classes. They have actually no rights. They have no rights. All of the decisions are consistently made about them. They have no input in these decisions. And as a teacher for a long time, One of my favorite classroom moments was I asked my classroom of sixth graders if they thought they should be able to vote. And the debate ensued. Some of them were vehement, like, absolutely not. We are not informed enough. I don't think we're literate enough. And I cackled at them. And I said, well, did you know that the majority of the American people actually don't read above a sixth grade level? So you are about as literate as most American citizens. Also, most people don't actually understand all of the laws that we're voting for. They're actually specifically written in some instances so that we don't understand them fully. And after I really started explaining things to them, I could see all of their faces like kind of change and shift. And they had this kind of aha moment, like, wait. So all of these people with barely more knowledge than we have are consistently making these huge decisions about our lives without any input from us. And I just said, so now I'm going to ask you again. Do you think you should be able to vote?
Amazing. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Shawnee Harris Bagwell from Portland Backpack. They make sure the kids we see every day eat every day. That's their motto. I love that. What is in the typical backpack that you all pack?
I love talking about this. So each sack is designed to kind of sustain you through the weekend, right? People kind of forget that, like, once that bell hits on Friday, some kids no longer have access to meals. And they rely on those school breakfasts and those school lunches to be able to eat and to be able to actually sustain themselves. And so we try to give them enough to sustain themselves for the weekend. So each sack usually contains two breakfast items, usually like a Carnation instant breakfast pack or an instant oatmeal pack or a cereal cup, two fruits, like a fruit cup or an applesauce, two snack items, usually like Goldfish crackers or a granola bar, and two main dish items like a box of Kraft mac and cheese or a can of chili, or we have boxes of rice or all kinds, you know, cans of soup. And my favorite part of the sack, of course, is the hand-drawn care card from community members.
That was my next question. Yeah. What is a care card? What's in there?
So the care cards are cards that are hand-drawn and handwritten by community members with notes of encouragement for kids, just to let them know that kids, you know, that someone really cares about them, right? That these are actually packed with love. And one of the most touching stories I was told was there was a student who had come in to their teacher and was asking, like, you know, who packs these sacks? And the teacher was like, Portland Backpack. And the kid was like, no, I want a name. I want you to tell me who packs these sacks. And the teacher was like, why? Why does this child want this intensely personal information? You know, but the kid looked at the teacher and said, because my dad says that nobody cares about us. And I said that the people who pack these sacks do. And that kid was right. And that kid was absolutely right. So those care cards are the most important part of the sack.
Taking a moment to breathe. 789, it's okay not to be fine. This leads me to that question. We're talking about the kids. This is the backpack, but kids are not units that are just in a peg hole standing and waiting to be activated. Kids are part of a family. What are these households facing? What are the kids facing? What are the parents facing?
Because we keep such a low barrier of entry, I don't know. I don't know. But because I do the work outside of my job that I do, I know what we're all facing as a city. If adults are houseless, guess who else is houseless? Their children. If adults are working 60 hours a week and can barely afford rent, where are their children? If adults are getting sick and have no medical coverage and are paying out of pocket for bills, what's happening to their children? So we know what these families are facing because we know what our society is like. And that's just the least amount of their worries. You know, there's addiction. And, you know, we had addiction growing up. I come from a family with a lot of addiction. But if we look at what's happening now, it's different. It's different.
How is it different?
Fentanyl is so fast acting. There is a comedian who was joking, but not at all joking, when he said, you know, we had crackheads for 30 years. You know, we had a neighborhood crackhead for 30 years. He'd come up, you know, and, you know, buy this, you know, do you want some of this? Do you want, and, you know, but we had him for 30 years. He tried fentanyl one time and was gone.
Yeah.
So it is different. It is different.
It is different. And also, I don't think that this is a random question. I think that I wanted to ask you, and this isn't something I discussed with you before this show, but I feel like COVID, the COVID epidemic, the long COVID, the lack of healthcare, I feel like this percolates up and down. And I feel like there must be kids that are caught in situations where the people around them can't even do what they normally would do. And I don't even...
Of course.
It's America.
Of yeah. course. So yeah, you know, what adults go through, the kids suffer from, and that's always the case.
Right. What do you feel like happens to the kids who do not get help, like what you provide?
You know, just some anecdotal stories that we've heard from our, you know, program leads who are often the school counselors is that, you know, they've had kids who have just been sent to them repeatedly with behavior problems. And because of the existence of our program, one of their first thoughts now is, well, how about you come in and have a snack and then we'll talk about it. And they often find that that snack mitigates a lot of behavioral problems.
I had not thought of it that way. I'm a jerk when I'm hungry.
Oh, I'm
sorry,
horrible.
Listeners. horrible. When you, what, I also wanted to ask, the food that go, I mean, in the back of my mind, there's thousands of people listening right now. If you're listening, I want you to help Shawnee, okay? I want you to help.
Yes.
I want you to help the kids. But so where does that's what's in my mind when I say, where does the food come from that you pack in the lunches?
So our food comes a lot from Costco. Big shout outs to Tigard Costco. They work so well with us and all of our large pallet orders. So big shouts out. Thank you, Tigard Costco. Also, we've been working with ZZ's Snacks, and they're a snack company that's entirely nut-free, and the portion sizes are huge. Like, the small box of raisins is usually 0.33 ounces. One ZZ's, which takes up about the same amount of space, is 1.3 ounces.
Let's get real. This is keeping it real, but I mean, yeah.
That's huge. So that's a huge difference. So, and without a huge difference in price, which is big for us. And so big shout outs to ZZ Snacks for working with us. And then our corporate partnerships. That's a big help to us. Companies and corporations who are able to actually purchase food for their packings is a big help for us when it comes to how we're able to supplement the $15,000 to $20,000 a month it costs to purchase food.
So you, a lot of times, like I'm unemployed and I've been to the Sunshine Division a few times in the past year. And that is, I'm not totally always sure where all that food comes from, but I feel like parts of it is surplus food. Part of it is purchased from Sunshine Division. Oh. But there's a kind of, Sunshine Division, I don't want to be negative, but there's kind of a lot of junk food in there, in that box, right? And I will say, I was over the moon when they gave us ice cream last summer. I'm not going to lie. But what I hear you say is, instead of having contributions of food, you gather funds and purchase targeted food, because when you're describing what's in those boxes, that's not junk food. I mean, I may not love a fruit cup, but that's a real food thing.
Yeah.
And you're also introducing kids to what is real food.
And it's also shelf stable. That's the most important thing, is that it's shelf stable. That's also why when we ask people to make care cards, we say no holiday themed anything, no seasonal themed anything, and no glitter. I'm going to repeat that probably 50 times during the show. No glitter. Thank you.
Glitter is a micro pollutant. Microplastics wind up in our body. In England, it's banned, and people in this country. I love my glitter people, but
they
be
just
so careful.
Stick
now.
In the carpets and the floors, and you can never get them out. And you're
eat it.
Sparkles
we eat
of
it.
Glitter for every. I just
yeah,
oh,
we
it's
do.
Too much. So no glitter in the warehouse. Thank you.
Right. So you've talked a little bit about your corporate sponsors.
Yes.
I wanna ask you, like, can we get a list of all the people that support you? Because there's people out there, again, and I was talking with Shawnee about this in the lobby. This show is really about hopefully trying to inspire you, if you're listening right now, to do your big project. I want people to understand how programs like this come together and how they operate, and that's why I ask questions like this. Mm-hmm. So what you have the corporate sponsors, you have other sponsors. Let's talk about the sponsors.
So we have a lot of ways that people can support, and what support often looks like, what direct support often looks like, is an organization will organize what we call packings, and usually they will pre-make the care cards, because although it'll take a group of about 20 people, maybe 45 minutes, an hour to pack 300 sacks, it takes much longer to write 300 care cards. And so we ask that people come usually, but those you can do at home. Those you can do after dinner. Those you can do at school. Those you can do at work. You can always make care cards everywhere. We have some great examples on our website. If you go to portlandbackpack.com/care cards, you can kind of see what they look like at all different levels. I'm not the most artistic, but I can put a sticker on a page and color it. I could do that. And you can send them all the time. So we're always taking care cards. You can organize a packing, and that would involve coordinating with our amazing program and volunteer manager, Christy, who organizes all of the packings and community events. And Christy would tell you either how much it costs for us to buy the food or let you purchase the food yourself, and she will guide you with amounts, because we actually pack everything in groups of eight. And so that becomes really important for people who want to do packings at home, that we pack in groups of eight. And we'd like them all to be the same because kids are kids. And so you don't want kids getting different things and making those comparisons, or because they always turn into value comparisons.
If you just tuned in, we're broadcasting live from the George Page Master Blaster Memorial Air Room today. It's a beautiful day. And this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest live in the studio is Shawnee Harris Bagwell from Portland Backpack. They make sure the kids we see every day eat every day. I love that. Somebody was just calling. I love it when people call, but listen, I can't answer the phone. I'm engineering the board myself. If you're listening right now and you want to make a contribution to society, come and be a KBOO volunteer and learn how to run the board and be my engineer, and we'll be able to take calls, and it'll be beautiful. It doesn't hurt at all, and it's totally free.
That would be so cool if we could take calls.
I know. And, you know, in the future we will, because somebody's listening right now and they're going to the KBOO website, kboo.fm, mm-hmm. and they're looking on how to be a volunteer. I know that's true. They and are. It doesn't matter how old you are mm-hmm. or what gender you are. You just need to be able to get up early because this show starts at 8. I'm just saying.
Cool.
I think that... you know, I'm an information activist, and I love all the activists, but I think that words are powerful and ideas are powerful, and that's why I love Keeping It Real, this show, because we just let loose ideas of people that are trying to build, like you said earlier, trying to build the reality that we want to see, mm-hmm. and I just respect that completely. Anyway, moving forward, we talked a little bit about the kids, their whole families. So... what I want to ask you is, when people contribute to the Portland Backpack, they're actually really contributing to an entire family. They're contributing to an entire household.
Oh, absolutely. And the amount of food that we pack, the kids have told us, some of the testimony that we've received has been things like, I love the sacks because I can share and I don't have to just eat in people's faces. And I love that about our sacks also, is that, you know, you can make a box of mac and cheese and share it with a couple of people. And that, yes, we make the sacks for each individual kid, but we make them with whole families in mind.
This is a place, I'm in my head, I just... in my ADHD brain, I just started thinking of all the times that I've read about entry, like human history, when there were people who were students and their parents were hungry, and what in literature, like what the school does to send home a little bit of food that the mom can also have.
Well, it's not just the parents, you know, because again, because we're only in certain schools, a lot of the times, because we don't have, we'll talk about more of that later, but we don't have the capacity to really add too many more schools right now. And so when kids move from one of our elementary schools into a middle school, all of a sudden they no longer have access to our program. And so if they're lucky enough to have a younger sibling who's still at one of our schools, that younger sibling is able to request two sacks because we don't see right? And it was like, and it's not cheating. We ask how many sacks they want, and we give them what they need.
Like I said, I'm out of work. I've been accessing food banks and stuff for the past, it's like 7 or 8 months, mm-hmm. and it strikes me how, like you just said, you know, it's not cheating. You know, at the places that I've been, you're supposed to, mm-hmm. at this time, you're supposed to prove levels of income and stuff like that. Yeah. And what kind of a place is this? Like, how much sense does it make that in this country where we've got a huge crop of billionaires now, there's people who literally have nothing, but they have to prove that they have nothing so that they can get a one thing? Like, that gets me. And what I want to ask you is, like, what create? I know that you know the answer. This is a very long answer, and I want to hear the whole darn thing. What is creating these dynamics of poverty, and what will it take to shut down child poverty here? And please go deep.
We only have like half an hour. There are other things I want to say.
Okay.
So I'm going to keep it fairly surface level. But I think it dates back to kind of the foundation of our entire economic system, and that our system was never actually designed for
everyone.
Average folks to thrive, right? We were specifically designed as a caste system, actually a very strict racial caste system. And for us to function, right, for capitalism to function the way that we have organized it, someone has to be at the top. And for someone to be at the top, that means that someone has to be at the bottom. And just because that is the way our system's organized, there will always be someone at the bottom. Now, what we're finding with the way that we have been passing policies and the ways that we have been moving as a society is that that gap between the top and the bottom is growing and growing and growing. And, well, all I will say is I would love for all of the listeners to just take maybe 10 minutes of their day and research what happens in societies when the difference between the top and the bottom grows and grows and grows. So that's your homework. That's your homework for the day.
We need you to write it down, and we're going to have you send it to the radio station.
And it will be graded.
We are live in the studio with Shawnee Harris Bagwell. We're talking about Portland Backpack, and we're talking about, I want to say child poverty. Is that the right way to put it? Is there a more descriptive term than child poverty?
We can call it child poverty because there are children in poverty, but I don't believe that poverty just exists for children in a vacuum. You know, it's not like children just wake up one day and go, I don't have a job or any money. Like, they're children, right? And so if poverty didn't exist for adults, poverty wouldn't exist for children. And so the problem of child poverty is actually a problem of adult poverty. And so I think that if we cared for adults better, their children would do better, right? Like, as a society, societies are judged by how well you care for your young, your elderly, and your disabled. We're not doing well. In Multnomah County right now, 11% of folks report being food insecure, and of that 11%, 34% of adults report earning too much money to qualify for assistance. If 30% of those adults report earning too much, what percentage of children do you think it is? If it's 34% for adults, what percentage of children do you think make too much to qualify for assistance?
Children don't make money. Yeah.
But it's 36%.
That's amazing.
And if that isn't a correlation, I don't know what is. So that tells me that if we dealt with that 34% of adults, that 36% of children would be covered.
Right, right, right. And in our town, we're broadcasting from Portland, Oregon right now. In our town, I feel like the elected officials have lowered the barriers to be a property speculator instead of lowering barriers to getting jobs or to get sustenance for everyday people. I feel like Portland is a great place to come if you've got a lot of money and buy a bunch of real estate and cash in. You know, and that now I'm not going to ask you political questions this entire time. But since I just said that about what the elected officials do, do you feel as if elected officials can have an impact on this, or is it just, or what?
I think we all can have an impact on this, right? We could rely on elected officials to do everything, but there are too many orgs out there doing the work. We would love for everyone to step up, but also we aren't the only problem, right? We aren't the only problem, and it would be absolutely ignorant of me to say that we were the most important problem. So All that to say that especially in Oregon, with our bizarre short session, long session system. Of the legislature, where we do not have a full-time legislature, right? We do not have people working full-time to make these laws, to pass these laws, to examine, to study these things. We do not have people working full-time to do that. And it pays low. So everyone can't actually afford to even, you know, run and be elected in those positions to do it.
Right.
So all of that being said, it is not an easy position to be in when you're getting 3,000 bills coming down the pike and 2 months to get it done in. It's hard to just say, like, oh, those politicians, you know. It's a lot more complex than that. But what it will take is all of us caring, right? To quote the Lorax, right? If all of you, what is it? Is if all of you care, oh man, it's going to drive me crazy. But it's essentially like the people who care are the only ones who are going to get to do it. Oh, this is going to drive me nuts.
I know, I'm looking it up. So, you know, I'm Lisa Loving. My laptop computer is my binky and I take it everywhere. Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not.
That's it.
Right? So with that, I want to shift gears a little bit and start talking about our listeners and start talking about what volunteers do. How many volunteers do you need? What will they be doing? And when do they need to be available?
We don't need too many, just usually about 1,700 a year. So it's low ask, not too much at all. But it really takes kind of a village. We only have 4 people on staff full time. And so we are absolutely fueled by our volunteer work and by the work of volunteers and the work of some of our corporate sponsors, like Hampton Lumber. What? Hampton Lumber, what? I want to shout out Amy Leanne and Chris Batten right now because they have stepped up above and beyond like tenfold when it comes to the way that they have supported our program. Not only did they pack a record number of sacks for us, like most people, because we only have so much space in our warehouse, so there's only so much people we can have packed. But in one packing, they did 2,500 sacks. It's kind of incredible. And not only that, but they have donated to us in a capacity that has allowed us to hire more staff and actually like grow our program. They've sponsored 2 schools. Hampton Lumber has really just been exceptional, absolutely exceptional. And without partners like that, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. And so there are a lot of ways to partner with us, but I definitely want to point out that like if you want to go above and beyond like Hampton Lumber, we welcome it, but good luck going above and beyond what Hampton Lumber has done.
Right. I just wanted to walk that back and say Hampton Lumber, Oregon-based sawmill company, 10 sawmills in Oregon, Washington, British mm-hmm. Columbia, multiple generation family-owned business. Never heard of them. That's amazing.
I actually had only heard of them because Jamie Hampton is the
physical
artistic director of
Body Vox. Oh, but that's right, Body Vox.
Body Vox.
Huh, that's interesting too.
Yep.
The artists that just split off and do their Body Vox is weird. They do weird stuff. I'm not saying it's bad.
Oh no, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's absolutely amazing. But it's so different. Like that's definitely like a dance studio. You're not going to see. I was actually their house manager for a couple of years. I've done so much things, but they give you free dance classes if you work there.
That was a secret. Body Vox, just move on. People know that. They're writing it down.
Yeah.
All this stuff is good for you. It's good for your body. And family-owned businesses, generational. That's investing in the kids, right? and the families.
And if you're Hampton Lumber, you're directly investing in kids and meaning it.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm the host and producer, Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Shawnee Harris Bagwell from Portland Backpack. They make sure the kids we see every day eat every day. I love saying that. I love it when people create nonprofit. Nonprofits are difficult, and there's a lot of spikes on the nonprofit institutions. They're difficult. It's not an easy thing. Yeah. But I love it when people create institutions that directly help people that really need it.
Yep.
Because when we, I love innovation. I'm a journalist. I love journalism innovation. But one thing I've learned about journalism is innovation is it does not come, and this is going to be rude, it does not come from people with a master's degree in journalism from the University of Oregon. I love all y'all. I love you. Where innovation comes from is never in a newsroom. It's people like the kids you're talking about who have a big idea and they think, what if, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, investing in all the kids, that's it's not a shortcut, but that's the only way that we can figure out how to make our society better. Because I'm an old lady. I'm not going to say how old you are, Shawnee Harris Bagwell, but we won't be here. And it's the kids who figure out whatever we have in the future is going to be something they made. That's what I love about it.
Yep.
Investing in the kids. They are the actual, literal human grassroots.
Mm-hmm. A wise woman named Whitney Houston once said that she believed, this was just her personal belief, but she believed that the children were our future. I don't know if you've heard this before, but she thought that if we taught them well and let them lead the way, that they could show us all the beauty that we possess inside.
Hmm. That's amazing. This is a difficult topic, and yet it touches so many things.
Well, because kids are people. They're little people, and we are big people, so we used to be little people. It touches all the things because we've all been kids. Like, we're all people. This is a people experience. And so it touches on every part of all of our human existences because all humans have been children at some point.
We have some experiential knowledge in the area.
I was a child once, I think.
Just once.
According to my family, never. According to my family, never.
Born at the age of 40.
Yes. My nickname was the warden and the fun police. My 4-year-old catchphrase was, your music needs to stay in your room.
You know, and it's just a reminder of how different the kids are. Do you understand what I'm saying? Kids are, like I said, whatever we have in the future is going to be what they made. But,
yep.
And that, it's not even easy to be a kid in our culture because it's like you just said, like, you know, you're being you and that here you have a label and you're just being true to yourself.
I just wanted some peace and quiet and to read my books. Okay.
We are live in the studio with Shawnee Harris Bagwell giggling. We're giggling.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, and I'm going to say this as we're talking about, like you said, the oppression of children. Sometimes I got to do something to loosen it up. And in a minute, I want to ask you about everything else that you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about before. Okay. But the thing that is sticking in my head is when you said children are the last unprotected class. When we're talking about protected classes.
Not the last. I was like, we still have a lot of unprotected classes, but they are one of.
A protected class is a technical term for someone that was identified by the, I want to say the Civil Rights Act of 1965, but it might have been 1964, as communities of people, groups of people that are not served by our society. And over time, society has at times added to that. It's a federal government thing.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel that the child poverty that we have in this country is normal? I mean, are other countries like this too? You had said, you know, it goes back to the dawn of our society, and I'm just going to go 1619. Yeah, I could see that totally. Mm-hmm. Is this normal? And how do we live with it? We live with it.
I mean, it is sadly very, very normal. It shouldn't be. In other countries, it absolutely is not normal. It shouldn't be normal, but it is. And how do we live with it? We're Americans. We turn on the TV
and we look for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we just do it. We flip it off. I was like, I personally prefer to scroll through my socials. That's how I like to click off. But we click off.
Click off. Shawnee Harris Bagwell, Portland Backpack. I feel like you're doing things in February. Maybe you're having parties where people come and pack and make the cards. Talk about what's coming up for Portland Backpack and how our listeners can plug in any way.
So every month we have care card parties, which are just parties where you can come to our office and make care cards. We just sit, we draw, we have some snacks, and we socialize together. And I think that's a great way to come in. We always need care cards. I can't stress it enough. I cannot stress it enough. The packings go so quickly. The care cards do not. We always, always, even if you just make them at home, send us in some care cards. We also have, our packings are usually planned in advance because of the shopping needed to do.
That's if you're talking about more than 1,000 units, that's a lot.
Yeah. And it's also in a rotation, right? Because each school is on its own delivery schedule. And we also have a system where it's not every week, because we like them to have 3 weeks at a time, just in case, like when the snowstorm happened and we knew that was happening, we always say send home 3 sacks, right? So then we know that they have like 3 weekends of food at least, or at least just that much, you know, that much food to kind of help out. And so we always try to make sure that schools have that extra week. And so because of our rotation schedule and our tight, tight space, you know, if we're talking about ways for people to get involved, if there's anyone out there who has an extra building, like with offices and a warehouse with parking, that would be a great tax write-off for you. And we need that because we are physically covered in boxes and bins. We cannot have more room. So that being said, we love to have packings, but we just have to coordinate them to make sure that we have space for all of the food. We would love you to check out our website at portlandbackpack.com, portlandbackpack.com. And if you go to our volunteer page, you'll see a detailed explanation of all of the ways that you can get involved with our organization. If you don't like to leave the house or do stuff, you can check out the donate page. This is actually my favorite page on our website. This page allows you to transfer your money to us.
Imagine.
So then we have more money for stuff like feeding kids.
Shawnee, when you look around the city, what do you see?
It reminds me of, I don't know if you've seen Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Haven't thought of it in years.
It's one of my favorites, but there's this moment where the lead is singing and she just kind of is like, look around, we're dealing with the lost and found. Just when you feel you've almost drowned, you find yourself on solid ground and you believe there's good in everybody's heart. Keep it safe and sound. With hope, you can do your part to turn a life around. And that's what I feel. Like, I work in nonprofit, so I'm constantly surrounded by completely exhausted, delusionally hopeful people who are working every single day to turn our lives around.
To do this basic thing. It's okay to cry. I say that every time I go on the air on this show. But sometimes I sit and think, like, with my energy, with my spoons, with my bandwidth, where am I investing it? Mm-hmm. And that's a legitimate, we all do that. And I feel like investing it in the kids is logical and effective.
Yeah. And our events are super fun.
I bet they are.
Like, that's the other part, is they're just an actual party. There's music. if you are with your coworkers, people do get wildly competitive at these packing events. They're like, look, I'm doing two at a time. I'm like, everyone calm down. Okay.
Slow your roll.
Everyone just chill. But we also, you know, if you can't afford to like buy the food into a packing, that way we have community packings that you can organize where we'll buy the food. And we do that for like Girl Scout troops. And there's a boys charity team that packs with us and soccer teams and things like that, because we really want to invest in kids helping kids.
Yeah.
But that also is true of like, you know, your social group or your church group. If you guys don't, you know, have $3,000 to spend on a packing, we definitely understand that. And we still want to provide opportunities for you to join our family and for you to get involved with us. And so I always say, come make some care cards, come pack some sacks. You can pack sacks at home with your family and just bring them, drop them off to us. There are so many ways to get involved. Check out PortlandBackpack.com. PortlandBackpack.com.
We are starting to run out of show. I want to save a few minutes at the very end for a special commemoration. But Shawnee Harris Bagwell, like seriously, I don't know a lot of people who have done as many things as you have. And your bag of knowledge, it includes politics, political analysis, understanding the political systems, which is actually a little bit different from the politics, mm-hmm. kids, all of that. For people with a big idea who dream of creating a community project, what advice do you have? Someone is so well-informed as you. What advice do you have for others?
So speaking of the list of things I've done, I actually taught a middle school leadership class, and one of our large projects was to create a project. And so my biggest advice that I can give you is just sit down with your laptop, your tablet, a paper and pen, and start to write down what you need. Start to write down what your idea is, what you want to do, and what you need to do it. And think of everything. Think of everything, right? If you want to have like a homework party, you're going to need pens and you're going to need paper. If you want to have a yard sale, you're going to want to remember that you're going to want to post something about it on social media, right? There's just all of the things, you know, you're going to want someone to help you. Are you going to need a clothing rack to hang things up? Are you going to need a table to set things out on? But I want you to sit down and just start to think about everything that you're going to need. And then you're going to take each one of those things, and one at a time, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. So you're going to take that dream, write it down, make it a goal. You're going to take each of those goals and make them tasks. And once those goals become tasks, you can start to check off those tasks. And at the end of that list, when you've checked off all of your tasks, your dream will have become a reality.
Shawnee, we were talking in the lobby before this show started, and we had talked about this thing, like, how do you organize? And I said, also, you need a timeline, because when I show up, I want everything to happen at once. And you had an analysis about that. Can you share that? Because that's important for people to know, too. Share what you're thinking.
So culturally, we are in a white supremacist culture. That is the culture of our society. And one of the tenets of that culture is a false sense of urgency. So I challenge everyone to ask yourself, does it need to be done now, or do you just want it to be done now? And if you just want it to be done now, sit with that. But things take as long as it takes, right? It takes as long as it takes. And we have a saying in the theater, right? You can have it cheap, fast, good, pick two. Pick two. So if you want it cheap and fast, it's not going to be good. If you want it good and fast, it's not going to be one cheap. And if you want it cheap and good, it's not going to be fast. And most of us are broke, so we need it to be cheap and good, which means it's going to take time to check those things off that list. Give yourself time. Give yourself time.
All right. Okay, one last time. What can people do to support your work?
Donate. Volunteer. Donate. Give us a building. Go to PortlandBackpack.com. Learn more about our program. Learn more about what we do. You can see a list of the schools we serve. You can see all of the ways that you can volunteer, and you can click on that donate page and give us your money.
All right. That's it for our show. This is Keeping It Real with Lisa Loving. Shawnee, thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Shawnee Harris Bagwell, Portland Backpack. Connect with them online at portlandbackpack.com, right? Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. KBOO Community Radio is reemerging. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Look, I want to take a moment to commemorate one of the best KBOO volunteers ever in the history. I know, it's okay to cry, it's fine. He passed away last week. Alan Kahn was a chef at a downtown bar who walked to KBOO after his workday and wrote news articles. Occasionally anchored the KBOO evening news. He was the most amazing KBOO news volunteer ever. He was the quintessential KBOO volunteer, a regular guy who never thought he would be writing news and becoming an information activist. As a cook, he occasionally brought food to the newsroom. His macaroni and cheese was the best! Okay, like 30 kinds of cheese in there. Alan was a student of the world who sat in the KBOO newsroom and brought you, our community, information from across the planet. When we think about newsmen, we think of people with fancy college degrees, wearing suits, and patting down their hair. But Alan Kahn was the real deal, a newsman. Listeners, he cared about you. We talked about you, what you need to know, why your life is important. Alan Kahn, you're always going to be here, man. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.